From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Future Focus Now, giving you great conversations with great guests from Winston-Salem State University and beyond. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor Elwood L. Robinson.
We understand that some people may be concerned about getting vaccinated. There are three readily available vaccines for public use in the United States. Routine processes and procedures are in place to ensure the safety of these vaccines that have been authorized or approved for use. Safety is a top priority, and there are many reasons to get vaccinated. Our guest on Future Focus will tell us everything we need to know about getting vaccinated. Our first guest, Dr. Pam Oliver, is Executive Vice President and President of Novant Health Physicians Network. She's responsible for medical group operations, care connections, the Novant Health Clinically Integrated Network, as well as provider education, enrollment, and engagement efforts. Dr. Oliver is a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist and has been practicing at Novant Health Women's Care since 2005. She served Novant Health in various leadership roles, including as sub-market leader for specialty practice in Greater Winston-Salem Market, physician service line leader of women's services for the Greater Winston-Salem Market, and senior physician executive for Novant Health Physician Network, supporting clinical and business strategy across the system. Dr. Oliver received an undergraduate degree in biology and her medical degree from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where she was Morehead Scholar and a Board of Governors Scholarship recipient. She also earned her master's degree in public health, maternal and child health concentration from the UNC School of Public Health while enrolled in medical school. Dr. Oliver currently serves as chair for the Forsyth County Infant Mortality Reduction Coalition. She serves on the Morehead Kane Scholarship Fund Board and has served on the Summit School Board of Trustees since 2015. She was appointed by Governor Roy Cooper to serve on the State Health Coordinating Committee and serves on the Boston Thurman Community Network, a community board engaged in community revitalization for the oldest African-American neighborhood in Winston-Salem. My next guest, Dr. Christopher Ola, received his BA degree from the University of Wisconsin and his MD degree from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. He completed his internship, residency, and fellowship training in internal medicine and infectious diseases at the National Naval Medical Center. He's board certified in internal medicine and infectious diseases and earned the ASTMH Certificate of Knowledge in Clinical Tropical Medicine and Travel Medicine. Dr. Ola is an infectious disease physician with Wake Forest Baptist Health and a professor of medicine and infectious diseases at Wake Forest School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where he has served as a medical director for the Center for Antimicrobial Utilization, Stewardship, and Epidemiology. Dr. Ola has served as a consultant on the Antimicrobial Stewardship for the Infectious Diseases Society of America, Centers for Disease Control, Institute of Healthcare Improvement, and Joint Commission Resources. In addition to these activities, Dr. Ola has considerable experience in planning for and responding to emerging infections and is an integral member of Wake Forest Baptist COVID-19 Task Force. He is currently advising Winston-Salem and Forsyth County government, Wake Forest University, and several community businesses in their responses to COVID-19. We are thrilled to have two individuals who have been an integral part of Winston-Salem and this community and this state and even this nation in terms of helping combat this virus. And also, they've been working tirelessly over the past 14 months or so during this pandemic. And they have been integral to the work that's being done. Welcome tonight. We welcome Dr. Oliver, Dr. O. I think I got your name right. If I didn't, from now on, you get to be called Dr. O. And I think I love that. Dr. Oliver, welcome. Welcome to Future Focus Now.
Thanks, Chancellor. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Chancellor Robinson.
We are glad to have you here. Let's get this thing started because we've got so many questions to get to. We are fighting and time is ticking, and we're certainly very aggressive in terms of trying to get folks vaccinated. Let's take us through. You had, I just introduced you and the work that you're doing. And Dr. O, I'm gonna start with you first. Tell us about your work at Wake Forest and what you've been doing over the past few months. But if you could, give us an update right now. Where are we in vaccinations and where are we in controlling this virus?
Well, the first one I'm gonna summarize in a few words is I do a lot of stuff having to deal with COVID, both for our health system as well as for our community and our schools. And it's been really rewarding for me. I've gone through a lot of emerging infections in the past, and this one's been one of the most challenging ones. So where are we now? Well, we're better than we were a couple months ago. And I think we're finding our way down the long path to get out of the pandemic, and we'll talk about our main tools to do so, to continue to do that. We're not totally out of the woods, and so we need people to continue to do the right thing and wear the masks and keep apart, avoid the bubble fusions, and between that and a little bit of vaccination, which we're going to talk a lot about tonight, I think that's our path out of here. So a bump or two maybe in April with some increased cases. But I think as we get into the summer, things will start to feel a lot better. And then hopefully for fall, our colleges and universities will be having our students back and feeling a little bit more normal and getting to the business of learning and teaching.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It sounds like for me, sort of an optimistic outlook. Dr. Oliver, do you share Dr. O's optimism in terms of where we are? I know of your work. I've actually had a front row seat looking at some of the things that you've been doing. Tell us a little bit about how you have been spending your last 14 months.
Well, great question. I'll say this is ironic. Today is National Doctor Day. And so happy National Doctor Day, Dr. O.
Dr. Oliver.
I've never been so proud than to be able to help lead a team, our physicians and all of our teams through this last 14 months. So, you know, from the beginning, it's been right at a year that my responsibilities were related to us trying to keep our team safe. And that meant making some hard decisions around decreasing the amount of care we actually were delivering and doing more virtual care because there were a lot of unknowns. If we, you know, think back a year ago where we weren't even sure we would have masks and we didn't have the PPE and there were so many unknowns. So it's been a whirlwind of a year. I had the pleasure of leading our teams when it came to one, making sure our clinical spaces were safe, that we could provide care even during that period of disruption through telehealth or otherwise. And at the same time, standing up screening centers. So those centers that were taking care of patients with testing, evaluating those patients who had respiratory symptoms we thought had COVID, and then pivoting this over the summer to get back into more care and then roll out our vaccine effort this winter. So I do share Dr. Ohl's optimism. I don't want anyone to think that we're out of the woods, as he mentioned. But, you know, I think it's kind of ironic. It feels good. The spring weather is upon us. The sun is out. I think people's spirits are lifted. And the vaccine is bringing hope. Like, the more people that we actually are getting vaccinated, the more we can see in our graph this idea that we could get back to something that more closely resembles normal. But I think as we're going to get into this conversation today, we aren't there yet. And it truly is going to take us keeping our eye on that. to get us over the finish line so that we can truly start to get back to normal.
Yeah. So one of the things that's happening is that we have this huge push. I mean, the government changes its goals every day in terms of the number of people that we would like to be vaccinated at a certain point in time. We now have at least three, right, vaccines that are currently in use. How we got to this point? Because we'll get into some of this, but how did we get one of these vaccines so quickly and so readily available in a time in which historically it has taken much longer? And I think that's one of the questions that we often get. But tell us how we got here with three vaccines at this point.
So, a little bit of technology, a little bit of luck, and a lot of ingenuity. So basically, you know, the virus has this sort of this weapon of evolution and how it gets and attacks people. But we as human beings have a lot of ingenuity and a lot of technology tools. And so what actually happened in with the vaccines is we've been working for some time, actually several decades, for trying to produce messenger RNA vaccines and vectored vaccines, because we could tell in the laboratory several years ago that these were going to be, you know, formidable and very efficacious vaccines. And we were working on them for flu, for influenza, because it would be so great to have some really good vaccine tools for flu. And we were getting really close to putting those into clinical trials, and along came COVID. And so the companies that were working on these and the scientists said, well, let's just take out that little snippet of information that says make antibodies for flu, and we'll replace it with a snippet of information for let's make antibodies for COVID. And so they were able to insert it into a vaccine that had largely already been studied and ready to go for the final clinical trials. And that's how we got it out there so fast. It's because we were already working on it.
Yeah.
And the clinical trials were energized by the government and the companies, and they were facilitated so we could get a large number of people studied at a time when there was a lot of virus circulating. So when there's a lot of virus circulating, you don't need as many people to show efficacy. And then we just added on the extra people to show safety. So that, in a nutshell, is how we came up with all three of these vaccines in a year's period of time. So hats off to science and technology for getting us through that.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Oliver, I'm going to highlight this point, because what Dr. O just said, I think, is important. Because I'll tell you why it's important, because I just found out this today, and I've been looking at this for a very long time. And that is that we didn't just start from scratch. There was a platform that was already built around how to design these therapeutics and these vaccines and so forth. So, because oftentimes I think the public, general public, thinks we did this so quickly and so fast. Dr. Oliver, help me highlight this point to our listeners.
Well, I would say if you rewound a year ago, when if we think of the way we traditionally do things and the vaccines that have been developed prior, there were a lot of us who were skeptical about the idea that we would have a vaccine by the end of the year, right? But breakthroughs in medicine happen every day as a result of multiple forces, lots of work coming together to show that we can do something that we never thought we would have done the year before. And so, you know, what I value about this is COVID really, whether it was our teams locally or was all of these scientists and all of the pharmaceutical companies, we had the best minds who were taking this foundational work that was already there, and they were all focused on one thing, and that was getting a vaccine, because the world was being devastated by this pandemic. And I don't think that people can overestimate the value of having multiple companies and all the great minds in the world taking a great foundation and pushing it over to help us to get three and more. There are other vaccines that are in the works that are still yet to be ready for approval. But to get all of this advancement, which seems like a short period of time, but it's not something that's made up. It's not something that that the scientists weren't aware of the possibilities for. COVID just gave us the best opportunity to be able to create it in a vaccine. And we've seen how effective it is, which I would say is just remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, great work all around. I think one of the great scientific feats, I think, in the past, 20 or 30 years, when we think about this and moving this vaccine into production and getting it into individuals. So where are we now in terms of getting folks vaccinated? Are we doing it quicker enough? We need to go faster. Where are we? Tell us about the work that the two of you have been involved in getting this vaccine to people as quickly as possible.
So I'd say that we are well on our way, and I'm very proud of the work that our organizations have done, even in partnership with the County Health Department here in the Triad, and that many of the systems and health departments and FQHCs across the state have done to vaccinate our communities. And Novant Health, this week we're bypassing 300,000 vaccines given, and that's across our footprint. We've had thousands of those that are in the Triad area to people who travel far and wide. So not all are, are citizens of the Triad necessarily. But I'd say that what we have been successful in is we've partnered together. So Wake Forest, the health department for Forsyth County, Novant Health, and even outreach to some of those health departments in smaller counties around us, figuring out what do they need, how do we work together, because we're in this together. And that's what's shown up with the science and with this vaccine effort. I'd say that, we still have work to be done. As we see in the very beginning, it was a supply issue. There were lots of people who actually were early adopters, ready to get the vaccine. And we had a limited supply. We've seen the new administration has significantly increased the throughput and output for vaccines. So we're seeing our supply allocation go up, and we're very hopeful that this will help us continue to push towards getting to 70-80% vaccination rates across our community. So we are working hard, and we're working through it. We can talk about equity at any point, but to making sure that all members of our community have access to this vaccine.
Yes.
Right. Dr. Old, tell us about the work that you guys are doing as well.
Yeah, so early on, the hardest part about getting people vaccinated was honing our skills at actually getting the needles into people's arms and getting people done. Because I don't think people realize that vaccinating for COVID's not like going down to the Walgreens and getting a flu shot. The vaccines require extra care. For two of them, some really strict refrigeration demands. And then we have to get everyone enrolled in the state databases. And we had the priority groups to work with, which were important in making sure that the people who really needed the vaccine the most got it first. And all that was logistically hard. And once we got all that all worked out and we really started rolling, then the supply became tight and there was not enough vaccines. So every week we'd wait for the state, and the state would tell us at the very last minute how much we had, and then we'd it was like playing a big game of red light, green light, if you remember as a kid. All of a sudden, the state says green light, and everyone runs as fast as they can and get shots in arms, and they say, oh, red light, and so no more vaccines. So it was a little hard. I think we're finally getting in our stride now, and both as vaccinators and the vaccine supply is getting more robust, and so now's the time to really start moving forward. I think, though, in the next month or two, that pretty much the people who've wanted vaccine will have gotten it. And so we're going to have to go and move a little bit from the supply side and start working on the demand side, because we want to make sure that people understand why vaccine is important. We want them to understand that it's safe. We need them to understand why they should get vaccinated. I mean, they're really, that's fundamental, is why you should get it done. And then we have to make sure that we have access and that it's equitable to everyone. And yep. That's the different stage of vaccination. And I think as we get out of April into May, that's what we're going to be working on harder. And in a way, that's a little bit more challenging for some reasons. But maybe right now we can talk about why someone should get vaccinated. What are the reasons one should get a vaccine for COVID?
No, I mean, let's tackle that. Let's jump right into that. Why should we get vaccinated? As you can see, Dr. Oliver, I don't know if you can see my pen here, but it says I've been vaccinated and I've actually got my second shot. So I am among, millions of people who have had their second shot. So what can you say about me? I mean, I had my second shot, so therefore I am what?
I'd say that you are, it depends. There's so many words. Yeah.
You're wise.
You're wise. It goes back to you got this vaccine for a reason. You either valued your own personal safety and security, or maybe it's that you valued the loved ones around you. Maybe it was this greater sense of community. Maybe it truly was all about the science and the recommendation. And I think that taps into the, I agree with Dr. Oh, you're wise. You are protecting your good community member, a good citizen when it comes to our need to protect, to get herd immunity, to protect all of our communities, especially the most vulnerable. So I often talk to people about figuring out what it is that we want at this point in this pandemic, right? There are some people, when we started our vaccine clinic, it fed my soul to be there when we had 75-year-old couples who came in together, and they were just ecstatic to have the opportunity because they've been scared, they've been isolated, they haven't seen their families. And to understand what that's been like for an entire year, it's hard for some of us to even to fathom that. And then there are those like I have a 99-year-old grandmother in Halifax County who, thank God, got her vaccine through a home delivery, a paramedic program there. And I am excited to finally hug my grandmother finally, right? And to see my mom for the first time in a year. And to know that I can do that and I'm helping keep them protected and they feel protected, right? So for all of us, it's a little bit of a different why as far, as what speaks to us. But I have with my public health degree and even my medical degree, it's not all about science. It's also about my sense of commitment to those around me. The children who can't quite get vaccinated yet, right? Hopefully that's coming to our elderly or seniors and to us all wanting to, if we're going to end this pandemic, we have to get past it, which is only going to happen once we can get to herd immunity in one shape or one sense or another. So that's a little bit about, why I think what people need to think about.
Great. And I'll just add a couple things to that. I mean, I think all of those things are correct. And I think that you have adequately said why I got vaccinated. But another reason why I got vaccinated, because I wanted to set an example, because I see myself as a leader in the community. And I wanted to lead by being a role model for other people to follow. So I wanted to also send a message to the community. I wanted to demonstrate these vaccines are safe. I received a message just today from someone in California who stumbled across the video that I did getting vaccinated and thought that, what a great gesture and that they were empowered by it and they were going to go out and get vaccinated because if a chancellor of a university could do that, then certainly they thought that they could do that as well. So that's one of the reasons why I did that. And I think that will shift us also into the discussion about how is it that we get all of our citizens vaccinated. We've gone through a lot of the discussions and we know the historical data about African Americans and the healthcare system in America, the hesitancy about getting vaccinated. We know all of that, but there are two major things that I see with this vaccine. One, the cultural aspect of it, and also the political aspect of it as well, that we have to fight, and the misinformation aspect of it, which makes, I think, our jobs even more difficult. Let's get into just a little bit about how we're trying to make a difference in hard to reach and marginalized communities, Pam.
So perfect. You know, you hit on a couple of things. One is starting with conversation and information, right? I don't expect anyone to sign up for something that they don't understand or they have questions and concerns about. And so I think, you know, all that we do, this forum that you're providing here, the multiple podcasts, news shows, forums that we all do to educate is super important. Misinformation is hurting our community, right? It is Dr. Google or all the people out there on social media who are providing information that's just not factual at all. It's really hurting us in ways, and how we even tackle that more aggressively and speak out against it when we see it is important. And I can speak to that when it comes to women and how we are not taking the vaccine because of a lot of misinformation out there. Second part of it comes down to access. So, you know, what we valued in this is how we take that vaccine, and we're much more successful for getting Black and Brown community members to get the vaccine. When we take it into places where they value, they feel comfortable, they trust, and it's closer maybe even to where they live and work. And so partnerships with the community have been really, really important in helping us to make sure we get this vaccine out to all, including rural areas or any underserved community. And then that advocacy, this like using our voice to continue to whether it's educate or lift people up who are getting vaccinated. There are plenty of leaders out there who actually don't want people to know they've gotten the vaccine because they are scared to take a stance, right? For whatever reason, they just don't want to be the face of the COVID vaccine, even though they trusted it enough to get it themselves. So I applaud you for posting. And I personally had to deal with a few people calling, a group calling my office around this whole, how could you advocate for this? And you know, and so I understand that there are consequences related to that, but thank you for speaking up and for advocating for our community.
Great. Dr. Ohl?
Yeah, I was going to add to that. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do, but it does come down to trust and access, and how you work to get trust is really kind of the fundamental aspects of how we work to get trust for anything else on an everyday basis. And it comes down to leadership, accurate information, being patient to answer questions, to be a little bit persistent. You know, a story is that down at our cafeteria, you know, everyone would always, when I check out, how are we doing, Dr. Ohl? How's the cases? Where are we headed? And I'll say, hey, we're doing a little bit better. Numbers are coming down. Have you got your vaccine yet? Well, no, I'm still not quite ready. And I say, well, what kind of questions can I answer for you? What would make you feel more comfortable? And finally, it came down to, and they said, well, you know what? Would you come with me to go get my shot? And I said, sure. I'm headed down there. Let's go. And we go do it. And so a little bit of persistence and being patient and making sure that the questions are answered and the misinformation is addressed. But access is huge. We did a survey for our Hispanic population that we serve in Eastern Winston. There's a lot of assumptions that it was all vaccine hesitancy, that people didn't want the vaccine. And then we did the survey, and guess what we found out? 75% of the people said they wanted to get the vaccine, but only 30% knew how to make an appointment to get it. And so that really helped direct us to where to go and to work with, because, you know, we don't realize that people do things different ways. Not everyone likes to use the internet. Not everyone wants to make a smartphone appointment. Some people would rather just call and talk to somebody. And so we have to be ready and always at the ready to be there for people to get their vaccine. The mobile units are great going out into neighborhoods. Yeah, it takes longer to vaccinate people that way. But every time you get a jab in an arm is another person protected and another opportunity to help protect your community. So we need more ingenuity to get out there and get it done. More community leaders, people of faith. Our faith leaders have been really helpful, actually, in helping get our communities. And then that also helps with vaccine equity, because if you get out there into the actual communities and talk to people and work with people, that increases equity as well.
Yeah, and I want to thank the two of you and the organizations that you represent, the healthcare systems that you represent. We are a FEMA spoke site on the campus at Winston-Salem State University, and we partner with you. We partner with you on Wednesday and Saturday, and it is so well run that we have received just a great response from the community, overwhelming response, positive response. People say they come. In fact, they now are leaving notes and writing notes in terms of the kind of how they were received when they came on campus. I have not had the most recent data, but about 80% of those vaccinations are going to Black and Brown communities, African American, Hispanic communities, and we're very proud of that. We think it's easy access. They can come on campus and get great care. So I want to thank the two of you for the part that you played in that. Let's get to a couple things that, you know, we talk about vaccine hesitancy. Yes, that's one. Access is one. I think we're doing a fairly good job in terms of that. But one of the things that we have been seeing over the past couple months are the side effects, the symptoms that are associated with getting vaccinated that appear to be in a younger generation. Younger than I am, because I had zero side effects, no side effects whatsoever. But I've had a couple of younger team members on campus that the second shot, those who are receiving the two dose shots, they suffered a little bit. Talk a little bit about, you know, the symptoms associated with that.
Yeah. So, and it turns out that if you've had COVID and then get vaccinated, the first shot is like having the second shot. You'll feel it a little bit more. So I you know, they're really not side effects per se. I think it's important to think of them as expected reactions, because this vaccine induces so much immunity, which in the long run is a good thing, because it fights the virus really well. But it induces such immunity that it's a little bit like having some of the symptoms of the illness, particularly a short fever and maybe a headache and some aches and pains and a little bit of soreness at the vaccine site. In young people, it's about 20% of people will get one of those. But it's very short-lived. By 24 hours, most of it's gone. It responds to Tylenol and ibuprofen, which is Motrin. And so it's really kind of a small dividend, so to say, of immunity. So I tell people, every time you're feeling that within 24 hours of getting the shot, just think about it working, because in a week or two, you're going to have robust immunity against the virus. And in fact, now we know how robust that is, from a few studies that came through this week. If you've been vaccinated and you're 2 weeks out from your vaccine, your chance of getting COVID during a major surge like what we had in January is 0.05%, so which is pretty darn low. So it works. So those minor side effects, though, really don't mean anything on the long term about the vaccine. Our long term safety data is great. And I really don't have any concerns about the long-term safety of this vaccine. And we even know now for pregnant and breastfeeding women, it's safe. And so this vaccine's a keeper, and this is the way we're going to be making a lot of our vaccines in the future, I think. because it works just so well. But those are the main ones. If you have any questions about side effects, you can call your doctor. You can call our COVID line at either Novant or here with Wake Forest, and we'd be happy to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. So why do you tell folks, Dr. Oliver, and someone mentioned that they couldn't wait to hear you talk about the vaccine as it relates to, you know, maternal and child health care and pregnancy and things of that note. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've tried to use my voice and platform as much as I can to make sure women have the best information so we're not left out and vulnerable during this vaccine effort. I believe that I have to think that some of the misinformation out there, which basically leads women to believe that if they get the vaccine, that it could cause fertility issues or be harmful to their fertility issues at any point in life, even if they're not pregnant now, or be harmful to their pregnancy. And I have to believe that there's this connection people have tried to put together by listening to some of our scientific talk and thinking through what could be. So they've heard mRNA vaccine, they think genetics, they think DNA, they think, you know, affecting their DNA code or genetic code of some sort. And then all these conspiracy or misinformation comes out. So I can tell you, you know, multiple societies, whether they're OB related, fertility societies, scientific societies have come out to look at the way this vaccine is designed compared to others and how vaccines work. And they do not affect your DNA. They are not affecting your genetic code. Nothing about that. And so all three of these are safe for women who are at any stage of life. So those 16-year-old girls who are able to get the vaccine next week when we go to group 5, all the way through, you know, my 99-year-old grandmother. And we know we use vaccines in the OB world. You've mentioned I'm an OBGYN. We use vaccines, at least two different ones, in pregnancy, specifically to help give the baby immunity when the baby's born. So mama getting the vaccine, I produce the antibodies that then cross the placenta and can help my baby. Or sometimes when breastfeeding, come through the breast milk to help protect my baby from infection. And there's now great data showing that those antibodies are crossing placenta or being expressed in breast milk to help protect the most, you know, some of our most vulnerable citizens, which are our babies. So I recommend, I want women to step up to protect themselves, their families. A lot of women are primary breadwinners, or, you know, we're important for all of us. We're the caretakers in general. So I want to make sure that women aren't misled by this and will step up to get the vaccine.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, thank you for that. Let's do some questions now, have you respond to that. First question, can COVID-19 vaccine make me sick with COVID-19?
No, it's deader than a doornail. It can't give you COVID. There is absolutely no way it can. We've had a few people get COVID after getting the shots, but that's because they were exposed to their family member or their husband or their wife right after they got the shot before they got immunity. They didn't get it from the shot itself.
Right. After getting COVID-19 vaccine, will I test positive for COVID-19 on a viral test?
No, you won't. Over time, if you got an antibody test for some reason, you likely would test positive on that. I'm not advocating people to do that. But you can't test positive by a viral test because it doesn't pick up the vaccine. It only picks up the living virus. So if you're getting tested afterwards and you're positive, it's not because of the vaccine. It's because of an exposure that you had before you became immune.
Great. If I have already had COVID-19 and recovered, do I still need to get vaccinated with the COVID-19 vaccine.
So yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, that's the most common question I get now.
That's right.
The answer is yes.
Yes to that one.
Advocate, yes.
And why is the answer yes to that? I've already had COVID-19 and I've recovered from it. Now, help me with this one, because I think this is challenging.
There's two big reasons. One is it boosts you. So you have more immunity after getting the vaccine than just from the natural infection. It's kind of like getting a booster shot for tetanus in a way. It boosts your immunity, the vaccine itself. The other thing is what we're finding out over the last couple of weeks is that when you get vaccinated after having COVID, you build more antibodies that are effective against the variants that are starting to circulate. So it gives you better protection against variants than natural infection does. So two good reasons to get vaccinated, even if you've had COVID. The second question that always follows is, when should I get it after having COVID? And the answer is anytime after you've recovered. There's no particular time frame. So if you're feeling well, and you've had COVID, you can go get it now.
Yeah. You know what, while we're on this, and we don't hear a lot about this, in the community, but yeah, we talk about these folks who've had COVID for an extended period of time. What are we learning about that? What do we know about that today? And are there any shifts and changes in that, given the therapeutics and given the vaccines and so forth? I don't know if we have any studies on that at all.
Well, it's we're getting more information slowly, and it's a complex topic. There have been similar long COVID, like we call it post-acute chronic illness, following other viral outbreaks as well. So it's not just COVID. And if you look in time, even going back to the Spanish flu in 1918 and 1919, there was a similar thing described after that. So there's something about certain viral and bacterial infections that can cause persistent feelings of unwellness afterwards. And it doesn't really mean you're still infected, but the symptoms are headaches, kind of fatigue, brain fog, people call it. They just don't feel sharp in their brain. Fortunately, the symptoms tend to go away slowly with time. Interestingly, it may be that getting vaccinated helps them go away faster. That hasn't been followed up with a strong study. But we're learning more about it. These things have been around for a long time, and they've been studied with mono and with certain stress illnesses and with Lyme disease, and no one quite understands it yet.
Yeah.
I would say that one of the things that's important there is that there is, I've had lots of questions from people around that too, is what to do, who do I see? And there is no, there's no expert. Like we put together, we ask people to see their primary care physician to understand what their symptoms are. And if they're having something that needs a deeper workup, then we definitely, proceed with that. But for the brain fog or some of those things, there is not a treatment per se that we have for it. A lot of it is supportive and waiting. And I am happy to hear that many people do feel they get better. Hopefully the data will show that after getting their vaccine.
Yeah. Of course, Dr. Oliver, a very good friend of mine currently contracted COVID last Tuesday, so a week ago now. Can he get a vaccine at this point?
So as soon as he is out of his quarantine period, so feeling better and out of quarantine so that he can go out to actually expose himself to others, then if it was 2 weeks ago, then he should be out of, and he's not febrile, yes, he should be able to get a vaccine.
But he has to be asymptomatic also.
Right. Oh, so asymptomatic, usually within 48 hours or so, if you're within that 48 hours period where you can be out around.
Usually the isolation period is longer than the symptom period. So as soon as your 10 days is up, you can go if you feel well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now back to me again. I've been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. I have 2 doses. How long does it last?
That we don't know. And I'll, Dr. Ohl, if you have more information on it, but you know, that is one of the questions people ask us a lot is this going to be an annual event to have to get a COVID vaccine, or will we need a booster of any sort? And I would say that all that we've, what we know about it is we're not quite sure how long the antibodies will last or if there will be required boosters or on an annual or whatever basis. But Dr. Ohl, that may be something that you have more information than I do.
Not a lot. I think it's the variants are what are going to tell us. If the variants and we are such that the vaccine immunity isn't quite as robust and there are more variants around, then we'll be getting boosters to cover those, kind of like how we get an annual flu shot. I think the vaccine itself is going to be pretty robust, and I imagine the immunity will be long-lasting. But we won't know the ultimate answer to these until we get into the fall, late fall, early summer. Because you remember, the studies were started in June and July of last year. So those people will have been monitored for a year coming up here in a few months. So we'll get some early information this summer.
Yeah. So, you know, so we come up with these vaccines and the first one and the first two have this amazing efficacy. I mean, in the 90% range. So that's what we're accustomed to. So we got one dose and then we got a second dose. Now we have a vaccine that's one dose. So how do you square with the public the fact that we got a 2-dose vaccine versus a 1-dose vaccine? Yeah. How do I choose which is better? Help me work through this, Dr. Oliver.
So we say all 3 vaccines are effective in preventing severe disease, hospitalization, and death, right? So we never say, I don't think we have many things that we don't usually say absolute or always in medicine, because there are always some things. But in those studies, the percentage of patients who died was 0 for all 3 vaccines, right? So what we are actually going for is preventing the devastation of the pandemic when it comes to those who require hospitalization and extensive treatment or are risking death. So all 3 vaccines are effective in preventing severe disease and protecting our community. We were trying to figure out how is the Johnson & Johnson one dose vaccine going to come off to the community. We've had such demand for it because people like the idea of just not having to come back for a second vaccine. From a logistics standpoint, it makes it easier for us to think about, you know, options for drive up or other types of clinics where we don't have to schedule people and call them back in. So any vaccine you can get right now is a good vaccine. I would not give up an opportunity to get the vaccine if you have the opportunity to.
Well, great. Take us through, you did a great presentation about pregnancy, but once again, take us through, I'm pregnant, a lot of folks out there who are pregnant, but I'm trying to get pregnant. I'm in that process. Should I take the vaccine?
Yes, you should take the vaccine, whether you are currently pregnant or you are trying to get pregnant at this point. And I would say always, it's about a conversation with your physician or your midwife or nurse practitioner, PA. Have that conversation with them about what your concerns are to alleviate any fears that you have. But I would say to protect yourself, you should. And for pregnant women, we are starting to see that the data around women who get COVID during pregnancy can have more severe disease and actually can have pregnancy mm-hmm. complications. So we always say if mom isn't doing well, baby's not going to do well. So protecting yourself so that you don't put the pregnancy at risk is also another factor to consider.
Yeah. Well, great. Fantastic. Dr. Oliver, I have you on the show, I can't leave this conversation without having you make an appeal to African American community, people of color, telling us why it's important for us to get vaccinated and why we should feel and not have anxiety around getting vaccinated.
So I wouldn't tell people that they shouldn't have anxiety around anything, but I would say this is how we need to move through this. The Black community and the Brown community or underserved communities in general have been devastated and continue to be devastated by this pandemic. And we need to get past this so we can heal, recover, save our loved ones who are currently dying at higher rates than anyone else, get our children back to school. Black and Brown children are losing. They've lost a year of educational attainment that we might not even see for a generation as we start seeing loss of attainment and economic success in the future because of what could have happened this year with them. Businesses being shut down, you name it, we have been devastated by this pandemic. And this is our opportunity to get past this and to protect our entire community. And I come from Eastern North Carolina. I very much come from a sense of it takes a village. We look out for each other. And this is that period of time where I understand it's important. I think about myself and, you know, what if and some, you know, a little fever or some chills or whatever. And yes, that's not comfortable, but this is important for our entire community that we can end this pandemic. And what we know it will take is that we can get this vaccine rolled out, get herd immunity before the variants start to evolve and make it even more complicated. And so that we can get back to a healthier healthier life and healthier community. So,
excellent. Thank you for that. I mean, that's a very powerful message. Dr. O, I've two doses. I told you I've been vaccinated. Certainly, I don't need to wear a mask anymore. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. No. we do. Masking's going to be around for a while. Until virus activity is really low because of herd immunity, and we're a ways away from herd immunity. So, you know, for instance, on the Rams campus next fall, you'll still be wearing masks. You know, all the colleges and universities, workplaces, because you get all these people together from different households and different areas. Not everyone will have been vaccinated. There can be some transient carriage of viruses. Even if you have been vaccinated, you won't get sick from it, but it can hang out for a while. So we'll be wearing masks until the entire community level is done. So the way I talk to people about this is sometimes people think, you know, okay, I'm in a pandemic world now, and then I get vaccinated, you're going to pluck me out of the pandemic world and put me in the post-pandemic world. And that's not the way it works for this. What we're going to do is as more and more people get vaccinated, we're going to be moving our entire community together into the post-pandemic world. And so it really does take a village, and it really is for a community. So even for your students, you know, on campus, young people sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, if I get sick, it won't be that bad. COVID's not that bad. My roommate got it last year. He was fine. But the thing is that another reason to get the vaccine, if you're a student, is to protect your Rams community and your roommate or the other people in your class or your teachers. So even beyond your own immediate family, which is important, but the communities that you work with, live with, worship with, play with, if you get vaccinated, you'll have to protect them too.
Great.
And wear a mask.
You gotta continue to wear masks. Absolutely. I'm gonna let you guys take us out on this one. I'm interested in getting, you know, vaccinated. Where do I go? What do I do? We talked about some of the challenges. Technology challenges for marginalized communities. I think one of the great things that we've done with our spoke site is that registration is just super, super easy. I've actually sent the site to some friends of mine who are not in Forsyth County, who are in other parts of the state, and that they've gotten registered, you know, in like while I was on the phone and gotten an appointment. We've made it super easy for them. Someone wants to get vaccinated. Where do they go at this point, Dr. Oliver?
So there are a few places. One, we appreciate all of the Winston State outreach team, which have done active outreach to folks and have developed these links so that we can send those out to the community and people can get appointments. You can go to getvaccinated.org. And there you can put in, as of next week, it'll be everyone is eligible for the vaccine who's 16 plus. So, anyone who's eligible, you'll be able to access schedules for the vaccine itself. We have realized the technology divide for Black and Brown communities and rural communities and how that's impacted. I mean, our easy button is just put out a link online. And now we've realized that to get communities, we've had to utilize our partners. So some of our church partners are actively reaching out to community members and people are calling them. And same thing's happening at Winston-Salem State with you all as our partners as well. So getvaccinated.org. On the Navant Health website, there is also MyChart sign up access and a number that you can call if none of that works for you so that you can get on some of our community vaccine clinic schedules.
Fantastic. Dr. O, how do people get vaccinated?
Yeah, no, a few things. One is be persistent, because it's funny, you may make a phone call or look online one day and there won't be anything available. But we throw in appointment slots as we get vaccine. And so if we get an extra shipment of 1,000 doses one week, you'll all of a sudden find a lot of spots opening up. So you need to be persistent. For Wake Forest, you can dial 70-COVID and make an appointment. And you don't have to be a Wake Health patient. We all comers. And then the county gives a lot of vaccine at the fairgrounds, which is really easy access, public transport to get there. And they have appointments opening up over time. They can do between 1,000 and 2,000 people a day. So that's a lot of vaccine. If you're going home for a few days, Eastern Carolina, like Dr. Oliver maybe, and you're taking some time for Easter break or spring break, you can go to their county sites and get vaccinated there. You don't have to go just in your own county. And so there are a lot of places to go. And Walgreens and CVS are really opening up now. The federal government just signed something with them. So in the next couple of weeks, they're going to be tripling the number of pharmacies that are giving vaccines. And pharmacies, as you know, are on every corner. So.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you so much. I mean, you have been great, great conversation. I want to thank Dr. Oliver, Dr. Ohl. I want to thank you for the work that you do in this community. Our community is better because of the work that you and your teams do and your partners do. We thank you so much. And I've learned a lot. I hope that our audience have learned a lot as well. And we're going to ask you once again to join us again next week for another edition of Future Focus Now. Thanks, everybody.